Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon.
If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast podcast announcing the commencement of the film franchise Fortnite's episode on The Purge, sanctioned by our Patreon. Weapons of jokes of class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during this podcast. All other jokes are restricted. Government officials ranking 10 have been granted immunity from this podcast and shall not be harmed. Commencing at the end of this speech, any and all discussions, including about the films The Purge, will be legal for 12 continuous hours. Police, fire, and emergency medical podcasts will be unavailable until tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. when this podcast concludes, or whenever you're listening to this. Blessed be our new founding fathers and America, a nation reborn. May God be with you all. Did you like how I had the actual speech written out and then very last second made it the decision to change it to be about the podcast?
You covered it very well.
Wow, you did not.
There was some stuff where I was like, why wouldn't you have changed that ahead of time? Because you clearly changed it on the fly, but not all of it. Not all of it. Certainly not. What do you think a class 5 joke is?
One that has the N-word.
is it slurs? Slurs? Well, I don't use them in my regular life.
Well, they're prohibited, AJ. So
well, they should be.
I shouldn't expect them. But class 4, the racial stereotypes and stuff, like that's going to be allowed for this podcast.
You know what needs to happen, Richard, is a purge of political correctness. That's what needs to happen. Yeah. We need a woke purge where for 12 hours anyone can say whatever they want for a change, you know?
Yeah, and women will finally be able to take a compliment for 12 hours.
Exactly. That's what we need, the woke purge. What we need.
Is that your continue the franchise? Should we do the episode in reverse order?
I don't think so. I do have a continue the franchise, though.
Well, that's good. So, this is Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Pop Show podcast, where every 2 weeks we watch all of the films in a franchise and discuss them for you, the listener. We are talking today about the 5 films in The Purge, or the Purge franchise.
the Purge.
Which started in 2013 with a film simply titled The Purge, then was followed up with The Purge Anarchy, The Purge Election Year, The First Purge, and The Forever Purge, which came out in 2021.
The Purge!
The first 3 films were written and directed by James DeMonaco, who wrote all 5, only directed the first 3. And before doing the first one, he wrote Jack. That's right. Francis Ford Coppola's Jack, starring Robin Williams. He actually did write that.
Did he really?
Yeah, that wasn't a joke.
Incredible. It's like you set me up for to tell that joke, but then you were like, it actually is true.
Yeah. He'd only done one film before the directed one film before The Purge. It's called Staten Island, which is a narratively significant location for this franchise, but it also stars Ethan Hawke, who of course stars in the first Purge. Now I'm not talking about the film.
Let me stop you there, Richard. Yes, very fun. A very fun franchise to make jokes about. Richard,
class,
if you'd asked
class
me.
Class 3 and below jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Richard, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago to name, like, I don't know, all the films in the Fast
the Scooby-Doo franchise.
Or the Scooby-Doo franchise. You know, more or less, I like to think I'm pretty knowledgeable on franchises, whether I've seen them or not. If you'd asked me how many Purge movies are there and what are they called, I would have said, there's The Purge and The First Purge, and that's all I know. This franchise, as we touched on previously in the Kissing Booth episode, this has... I hadn't seen... I had seen one frame from this entire series before watching them, and it was the creepy masks that they wear in the first one. There was
in the
Purge 2013, and that was the only thing I'd seen. These films did not release in New Zealand.
I believe I was talking to our friend Andrew Todd, who I watched the first one with. Now I'm not talking about. No, I watched the original one with, and. Because he was up in Auckland for a My Chemical Romance concert. He was on the Scooby-Doo episode. But he said, as far as he can recall, they may have played one at the movie marathon where there's... It's a very movie marathon-y sort of film. But other than that, I'm not sure any of these ever actually released in New Zealand, certainly not theatrically. And yeah, it's just a very American franchise, and I'm sure that'll be a big talking point for us later on. The general conceit, if you've never heard of these films, is that it's set in a world where for one night in America, all crime is legal. And so the idea of it is that it is a night to get all of your violence and hate and anger out of your system. And you just fucking kill as many people as you want. And then the other 364, in some years, 365 days of the year, you can just go about your normal life knowing that, when that sweet, sweet March 21st, I believe, comes, bam, you can purge all your hate.
Richard, is this episode going to come out on March 21st? It'll come out March 20th.
Wow.
Was that intentional? Well, this was voted on by Patreon.
No, this
was
random.
Intentional? Was it? Oh, it was too. It was the roulette. That's the craziest thing that's ever happened. And we haven't even noticed until now. This is coming out a day before the annual purge.
Wow, yeah. Well,
that's
just
it, you got
check.
The date right.
Yeah, what day is the purge?
Let's double check after singing how amazing this is.
March 21st, yeah.
Wow, so this is coming out on March 20th, New Zealand time.
Wow.
What the hell? That's crazy. This was not planned at all.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy.
Wow. So, yeah, the every night, once a year.
Every night. It's actually not every night. It's the opposite. It's one night.
Yeah. One night a year, you can kill whoever you want. You can do whatever you want.
Except for... What is it, classed government officials level 10? Ranking 10.
And I have a few things to say about the franchise as a whole, but the first thing I will say is, troublingly, it seems to work. That's, I think, one of the problems that this movie, which is very politically charged, you could never get people saying, like, I can't believe they made The Purge political, because it's explicitly political from the get-go.
I will say it's... Because they do talk about crime is down, yada yada.
Yeah.
The first film takes place in 2022, and there has been a... The Purge has existed at that point since... 2016. Okay. The first national purge is in 2017.
Right.
So, because we'll get to that when we cover the first purge. But yeah, so the purge is accepted as just part of everyday life. But in the first film, it's only been going for 5 years. But they do say, crime is down. People are generally more calm throughout the rest of the year. But I do think that it's implied that there is probably some manipulation of statistics. Well,
especially in the sequels, and the driving theme and driving motivation for most of the main characters in these films is the stat that rich people are able to protect themselves in a purge, where and so the murderous rampage that happens on purge night tends to target the poor and the impoverished, and so it's a class.
Yeah, well, because one of the other things they keep talking about is that, you know, homelessness is almost non-existent, and it's like, well, because you know, if you just want to go out and kill someone, if you don't have a grudge against anyone in particular, you would presumably go after the homeless.
It's also, it's like how Boris Johnson was like, we're getting rid of waiting times at the doctors, and all the rich people were like, that sounds like a good thing, where in reality going to the doctor in England now is a nightmare because there's no waiting times, so you can't get in.
Right.
Like, it's one of these things which, like, it only solves the problem because they've created another problem, like a worse problem.
Right, I didn't even know about this.
Oh, yeah, no, doctors in the UK, the NHS, it's a travesty, man.
So how is there no waiting time?
Because you have to call up at 7 a.m. or something like this. Right. You have to call up at, like, 8 a.m., and wait on hold and then say, can I speak to a doctor? And they'll probably say no, but you can come speak to a nurse.
Right.
And people die. People literally die all over the UK because they can't get to see a doctor.
Wow.
Unless they're rich and they can afford private healthcare.
Wow.
So all of this is very relevant for The Purge. The other thing I wanted to say about the franchise as a whole that I thought was very funny is that the message that the characters arrive at, like the thesis statement of almost every Purge movie, is like, this is a bad idea. And it's like, yeah, but it's not real. Like, every Purge movie ends with characters who either had a different outlook on life beforehand, or they are like the people that suffer most. Like, it reinforces this idea that, like, you know what? Killing people is actually wrong. That's what I've learned. And it's like, yeah, the lesson of each Purge movie is like, the world should be closer to what it is now than what it is in the Purge movies.
I mean, I think most of the stuff I have to say about these films is just to do with the general gist of the franchise. It's like, I find the premise and the log lines of the films more interesting than I find any of the films. But
What did you think of the films in general? Did you like them all?
That's a really hard question, because it's like, I think, I don't know, you maybe just have to be in the right mood for them. And they are all, I mean, I described this, I think, last week or last episode as being like, this is an incredible case study on just like having one really good idea and then fucking it up five times.
Like, sort of like Final Destination, a franchise with a great premise that never really, like, there's no like best Final Destination movie because all of them falter in some unforgivable way.
Yeah, and I think it is the same kind of thing. There's no real best purge. I mean, there kind of is a best Purge movie, like, if you just ask the general public, but even then it's not considered very good. But I think, yeah, just the concept of a purge is so fascinating and so uniquely American that, it's a fascinating idea for a franchise, but none of them give me what I want from the franchise, and we'll probably talk about that more as we get to continue the franchise. But we should start our general, sort of our usual discussion that we do, starting back at the first film. If we take our way back
to the first purge.
The first purge. I'm talking about the first purge.
Okay, as in...
You are blowing my mind, AJ. So the Purge 2013, as I said, written and directed by James DeMonaco, stars Ethan Hawke, Lena Headey, as two parents, and
I did not know they were in it. It's shocked to see Ethan Hawke headlining the Purge franchise.
but he took the role as apparently being friends with Jason Blum and James DeMonaco, and essentially said, you know, like, I like your little low budget film idea. Sure, I'll do it to give it some star power. essentially, and apparently only received $3,000 up front to do the film, but then got paid in scale.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah, so The Purge 2013 is about... It's the most different of all the five movies. It's the most defined of all the five. As so we're set, we're a few years into the annual purge going on every year. And the main character, Ethan Hawke, is a security salesman. He sells you know, home security systems, which he thinks is, he lets us know are second to none, basically, as the story goes on. And they prepare for their annual purge night by locking down, only to find that things go a little awry, Richard, when his young son, who ends up being the really the undoing of this entire story, and it's not really focused on, lets a scared homeless guy into the house who's escaping from people trying to kill him, and these people trying to kill him come to the door and are like, "We don't want to kill you. You're rich like us. We want to kill the poor scum, but if you don't let us kill him, we will break in and we will kill you." And so that goes on, and a bunch, the whole thing's basically set within this
house. It's a home invasion thriller.
It turns out the neighbors also hate Ethan Hawke and his family, and they break in. And spoilers for The Purge, the first purge, not the first purge, but the first purge, is that basically they join forces with the homeless guy instead of giving him back to them. Ethan Hawke gets stabbed by one of the purges and dies. The rest of the family hold their neighbors at gunpoint until the 7 a.m. bell rings and lets them go back to their house.
Yeah, exactly. So I had seen this movie before. I remember reading about it a lot in 2013 and seeking it out online or something to watch it myself. Mm. I was going through a big Ethan Hawke phase. I was a big Ethan Hawke guy. And so, I was just intrigued by the film, and I thought, oh, yeah, it's a fine home invasion thriller, but it's crazy that they that it has this premise, you know, outside of it. And then I remember when they said, oh, we're making a second one, and oh, it's set on the streets, I was like, oh yeah, of course, yeah, that's what you do. And you know, the director said, like, you know, we had less than 20 days to shoot this, we had less than $3 million to make it with, so
of course, you know, doing this. It's interesting, isn't it, because I did not know the first one was so self-contained. The second film is what I imagined the first film would be. Like, completely. I had no idea it was... And, you know, I understand as a filmmaker that it's, like, a low-budget application of that idea. But at the same time, doesn't the first film feel like it should be one of the later sequels that's subverting the idea of, like, you've seen it big, what if it's real small? Like, it feels like that's more of a way to... to go, like, that would be more, this version of a purge story would be more interesting to me after seeing a citywide version.
I saw a thing on, it must have been an IMDb piece of trivia, that was like, each film gets bigger because the first one is about a house, the second one is about the streets, and then the third one is about the government. Like, the government isn't inherently bigger than streets.
Yeah, then how are we measuring these two things? I can see what they're saying, though, I guess. Like the third one involves the fate of the country, whereas the first two are more self-contained. Another interesting parallel I drew was that Dread, 2012's Dread, is also a movie which invites you to imagine, like, this giant world and then is self-contained to one building that also stars Lena Headey. Yeah, like... I had the same feeling after watching Dread, was like, why was this all self-contained when they teased this massive world? And I think Dread never got sequels, unfortunately, but The Purge did.
Purge fucking can't stop getting sequels. And yeah, when I was watching it with Andrew, he said, midway through, he's like, do you know what's a good movie? Dread.
Wow. And I was like, there you go. There we go.
There we go. So what did you think of The Purge?
I thought it was serviceable and scrappy and kind of fun. I didn't really like it that much, but I gave it 3 stars and was like, good enough to passing grade.
Yeah, I think I saw that you gave the first two films, I know you gave more, but the first two films you gave both 3 stars, but you gave a heart to the second one. And I was like, that's a pretty accurate representation.
Yeah.
I don't think the second one is so much better than the first one, like I'd sort of been told it was. But right. It's just like, oh yeah, I mean, this is a better idea.
It's more the second one is the delivery on what you were promised.
But it's like one. Knowing that it was like this low budget, this super, super low budget thing, and the first one's a proof of concept, and then the second one's the film you wanted to make. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine with that. Like,
Yeah. I think one thing I didn't like about the first one, and it's sort of what I was saying before about the characters coming to realization that the Purge is bad, but it's like, it's a movie which wants to have these theatrical, lavish villains. Like the guys that wear these creepy masks that come to the door, they speak very biblically. They're like, for it is our right to purge, you know, and like they're speaking like that. And then everyone else is kind of really grounded and realistic. And it's like, do you want this to be silly and campy, or do you want this to be kind of a like class, what would happen
I was thinking that it's like I was thinking while watching it that it is like this, it's I find it really annoying or distracting when you can tell a film is trying so hard to have iconic imagery, like when they get inside the house, when the bad guys get inside the house, one of them is this woman, they've all got these masks, it's like it's a whole thing. And I found, you know, they're like the LED masks that like light up and they have the X's on the eyes. You can buy those for like $20. Like they're like made from the film they light up. Night. Yeah. I was like, fuck. I mean, I almost bought one, but the pay button like wouldn't actually click. It was weird. Anyway. So one of the women is wearing this wedding dress with a mask and a machete, and she is skipping in slow motion down the halls of the house. And it's like, you know, on set, they were like, this is the iconic shot from The Purge, you know, that people are going to be dressing up as Purge Bride. And it's like, yeah, and just there's so much shit in it that is like, oh, I know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I don't know. There's just I just don't like that transparency. I mean, I'm sure, like, there's the behind the scenes story of James Cameron talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger about the line, I'll be back. And that Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, it should be, I will be back, because he's a robot. And they had this big debate back and forth. And eventually Jim Cameron was like, just fucking say, I'll be back. Like, this is going to be the line from the movie.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, you know, so I'm sure when they create these super pop iconic moments of pop culture, they know they're doing it. But I mean, it's the same way as seeing like failed Oscar bait.
Yeah, right.
You know, people on set thinking they're making something more important than they are.
Yeah.
Is
tragic.
Tragedy.
How I feel doing this podcast.
Yeah.
But, so
there you go.
The son, Ethan Hawke's son, Ethan Hawke and Lena Headey's son, he lets the homeless guy in. And then he does, I remember, he helps hide him, and basically he directly leads to his father's death.
Absolutely.
Like this kid, and I get it that the message of the film is like, well, they should be protecting the vulnerable, but I think that gets lost in that sort of trademark frustrating younger character, the, you know, the girl from The Lost World or any number of other kids in Spielberg movies. Like it falls into that camp of like, the only reason we're not blaming this kid is because he's a kid. But it's very frustrating to watch all of this unfold, and it's basically all this kid's fault.
Yeah. There's also a daughter as well. They have a daughter who spends the entire film in a schoolgirl outfit. Very sort of provocative imagery. If you Google The Purge, it says, how old is the daughter in The Purge? And I can tell you she's 17 years old.
Fantastic. Thank you for
that. Oh, no, wait, that's from a different film. How old is she supposed to be? No, she's 18.
Wow. No comment still. I'm sick of commenting on this.
But there's the whole, so she has a boyfriend who just absolutely cannot wait to get into her pants. And he sneaks into their house to be purged or to lock down with them. And, you know, she's like, no, my dad doesn't let me date. And he's like, I'm going to talk to your dad. I'm going to take care of it. And the purge starts and it's like, fuck, son, you let someone in the house. And then they're like, oh, daughter's boyfriend, what are you doing here? And he fucking shoots him. And it's like, and then Ethan Hawke, you know, opens fire back on him because of course you do. and he kills his daughter's boyfriend, which is then, like, not really that big a part of the film. I mean, the daughter's pretty upset about it for a little bit, but it's like,
yeah,
it's just because, you know, as far as they're concerned, it's like, oh, this nice young man that comes around and, you know, tries to finger out.
No, he doesn't like him. Ethan Hawke doesn't like him because he's too old, he says.
Yeah.
He's too old for his daughter.
But, yeah, and so, I mean, I'm sure he was pretty stoked to do that. But, yeah, apparently, as the writer was saying, originally it was going to be the daughter wanting to kill her dad, but the producers didn't like that, so they made him create the boyfriend character.
Yeah, right. How would you resolve that, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, he just kills his daughter, and it's not really brought up again. Yeah. All right, now let's take care of this homeless man.
Something that I feel is, like, underutilized in the series that I would have thought would have been all over it, especially in the first one, is like very early on you get a whiff that the neighbors are actually planning to kill them. I think like it becomes pretty obvious that that's going to be the third act twist. And what this movie doesn't do is show you the next day when they're all being neighbors again. And I was like, I kind of wish we saw more of that. I kind of wish we saw, like, someone wrong someone in this egregious way, and then the next day they just have to go back to working together, and it's, like, illegal to fire them or do anything because what they did was on Purge night.
I this will come up again. I do want to have a big conversation about this, and so put a pin in that thought because it will come up again.
Consider it pinned.
Yeah. Where do you think the idea of the Purge came from? Because this is it's a completely original idea. It's based, not based on existing work, is what I mean by that. But where do you think it came from?
I don't know. From someone smoking a little bit of weed and thinking about America. that's the kind of idea it seems like.
No, James DeMonaco and his wife got into a car accident and. The other guy was a drunk driver and they ended up getting into a bit of a fight and James hit the guy and they were, you know, just so filled with rage. And his wife apparently in her anger said, God, I wish you could just get one free murder a year. And then apparently normally a very soft-spoken woman, never quick to anger. And he was like, damn, that's a good idea.
This is a crazy impetus for this story.
I know. And what a crazy story to tell, you know, about your wife.
To let people know that this happened.
Yeah. Be like, yeah, this happened. And then my wife, the fucking psycho. So do you have any more thoughts about...
What is it? What are we looking at on the Rototomato?
39%.
That's very low. I thought this is the kind of movie. Movies with this energy get like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes sometimes.
No,
like
this
these,
one.
These scrappy indie action movies, like, or thrillers, like they usually are quite adored, I think. But no, I think 39% is not an unfair score for this film.
Yeah, there's one review. Gary Walcott described the movie as almost the dumbest movie in history. My recommendation is Purge, The Purge, from your weekend movie plans. I'm sure he was very proud of that one. I'm really interested, though. I mean, it's behind a paywall to actually watch it. But, like, you know when they say something... for instance, if Bruce Campbell were to refer to the bridge on the River Kwai and he says the bridge over the River Kwai, in the subtitles you would put it in like brackets and just have the correct one. It's like, this is what they meant. Or, you know, if someone leaves out a word or if they're talking and they don't say the person's name and you add it in. The A in almost is in those brackets. So I don't... Did he just do like an apostrophe almost, or did he do a fun almost. Portmanteau that they've fixed there? But
that is very strange, and I was wondering why you were describing all of this grammar to me.
Yeah,
all of this subtitled best practice.
Well, I mean, you know a lot about it, clearly.
I'm glad you watch my Letterboxd work so that you know that I too was editing Bruce Campbell and being like, you don't know the name of your favorite movie? What the
Shall we move on to The Purge 2?
Second Purge.
The Purge 2.
But it's not
the
second Purge. It's just the second Purge movie.
So it is now the following year. This film is set tomorrow. Literally. The world, when we talk about the world of tomorrow, I mean the world of March 21st, 2023. That is when the Purge Anarchy is set.
Wow. Tomorrow from when you're listening to this.
Can't believe that didn't come up. Anyway.
Yeah.
What's the Purge Anarchy about?
The Purge Anarchy is what you'd expect from a Purge movie. It's about there's an annual Purge, and we follow a specific group of people who are caught outside in the Purge, and they don't want to die. They don't want to participate, and so it's them sort of like swinging from safe house to safe house. Who are your characters? You've got...
Frank Grillo. Frank Grillo.
Frank Grillo, right. So, yeah. So, Frank Grillo's the kind of, like, know-it-all, like, action movie man. He's the protector of a couple of other characters. You've got a woman and her daughter. You've got a recently split-up married couple, one played by Kylie Sanchez from Nikki and Paolo from Lost.
Oh, nice. Okay,
she is Nikki of Nikki and Paolo from Lost. And... yeah, that's basically the crew. There's also like a underground freedom fighter who thinks the Purge is a pretty bad idea. Mm. And I thought he was going to be in multiple movies, but he was swiftly dropped after this.
Michael K. Williams' character.
Michael K. Williams. I thought he was the best part. And yeah, I don't know if I need to go into any more specifics than that. It's them going from place to place trying to find safety, led by Frank Grillo. Lakeith Stanfield is in it for a small scene. And it was a pretty good time. I thought it was all right.
Yeah, it's yeah. I was disappointed by this, and I hadn't seen this one before, but I'd heard for a long time, oh, they finally got it right in the second one, and then the rest aren't as good, kind of thing. But yeah, this does have the highest of the franchise on Rotten Tomatoes. What do you think it is?
50%.
57%.
Yeah, I'd say it's the best one in the franchise.
Yeah, but...
Do you disagree, or does your disappointment sink it even further below others?
No, I mean, no, it's probably the best one, I guess. I don't know, they all just blend together. Like, this is the thing that I think disappointed me about watching the franchise as a whole. And I remember a few years ago, because I the first Purge was on Netflix, and I was like, oh, I've seen the first Purge, I may as well watch the first Purge. And... yeah, just literally just randomly put it on one day because I was intrigued by the idea of, oh, you know, how does wacky thing start? Let's have a look at the behind the scenes stuff. And it's like, no, this is just another Purge movie. It just happens to be set on Staten Island.
Yeah, agreed.
There's nothing. Well,
are we talking about the fourth movie now?
Yeah. Like I said, it's like sorry, I don't really I have track. Anything to say about the specific films. I just have.
Well, here's why, Richard. Here's let's let the cat out of the bag. It's because the first one's set in the house, and then the second four are the same movie with slightly different stakes. And I think the second one, the Purge Anarchy, gets points for being the first one to do it this way. I think the Purge Election Year is. If that came out instead of Anarchy, we'd probably like that one more than Anarchy. I think it's just about which one got there first. Then the first Purge, as in the first Purge 2017, is that when it came out? 2018. Yeah. That movie is just, it just like fails to be anything significant. It's like, this should be so significant because it's a prequel and it's just the same movie. And then the Forever Purge, I thought was the worst one because it undoes some of the events of the Purge Election.
But we'll get to that.
That was silly. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Purge Anarchy, the general consensus looking at a bunch of different reviews is that it's a slight improvement.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let's. I mean, I actually didn't really write anything down about the second one. It's the only one I haven't written anything down about because it was just. Apparently, Frank Grillo loved the black car so much he offered to buy it, but he wasn't allowed to.
Okay, we're in this territory of trivia now.
Yeah.
I think like we would be forgiven to. That we find a bit difficult to differentiate, particularly 2 and 3. So why don't we like talk about maybe because 2 and 3 as the end of the first trilogy?
Yeah, 3 together. Follows on quite well from it. So it's now what 20? This is a weird thing. So we're talking about the Purge Election Year now. What is the Purge Election Year about? The years of this one. is kind of strange because the Purge Anarchy is like explicitly the next year, but then we're supposed to believe that the Purge has been going for 18 years, but Frank Grillo's like not for, like, it's just...
No, it's been going for like 17 years by the Purge Anarchy.
According to this, I've got an official timeline.
Okay, yep.
And it has, yeah, the first film's 2022, second film was 2023, yeah. And then the fourth film is 2040.
Oh, the fourth film is.
Sorry, the third film is 2040.
The third film is 2040.
Yeah, because...
And Frank Grillo looks exactly the same.
Because they stitch themselves up by being... Because it's about a presidential candidate played by Elizabeth Mitchell, also from Lost.
Probably shared scenes with Nikki.
Yeah. And did you pick up the Lost reference in this?
What is it?
In the opening scene, she's stealing an Apollo candy bar.
Oh, wow. What a strange thing to put a Lost reference in.
Well, I mean, you've got an actor from Lost in it, so...
But she's, you don't put, like, a reference to Pet Detective and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
There actually is a reference to it in that.
Is there?
That's a bad example.
Was there actually a reference?
Yeah, when he's... you know the scene where it, like, the camera pans around and he's playing Joel, like, in his memory and now, and he's like just switches the beanie off and runs behind the camera. Yeah, and one of those he climbs out of an elf rhino's butthole.
All right, you had me going.
Yes. Yeah, so
she needs to have like lived a life destroyed by the Purge.
Yeah, because she had her whole family killed in front of her on a Purge night 18 years ago.
2040.
Yeah.
2040, this is supposed to be set, and the world doesn't look very different from
do you
now.
Do you know the Forever Purge is set in the same year as Blade Runner 2049?
This is crazy stuff. This is broken. I'll fix it for you. Don't put Frank Grillo in it then.
Or just don't have her family be killed in a purge. Like, have it not be her as a kid, like when her family was killed. Just like,
yeah, that's
there's,
exactly.
There's
yeah,
millions
yeah.
of reasons someone could
this
hate
is
the purge.
Worst decision they could have landed on for having their cake and eating it too. So what how many years has the Purge been going for in the Purge Anarchy?
24
years.
Oh, sorry, in Anarchy. In the Purge Anarchy, it's been going for 7 years.
7 years. So they really were like, it has to be 18. It cannot not be 18. Let's cast Frank Grillo again as a man who looks quite youthful anyway. Like, it's not like he's like the kind of... It's not like Tim Robbins in The Shawshank Redemption where you're like, well, he probably would look like that more or less for 20 years. It's like, this is a man who looks distinctly like 37 this whole period.
Yeah. So what is the Purge election year about?
Election year about is Elizabeth, what's her name?
Elizabeth Mitchell.
She is a senator running for president because the new founding fathers, which I don't know if we've talked about much yet, are the people that put in place the Purge.
It's the America's like third political party after Republicans and Democrats.
Right. And because her family were killed in a purge 18 years ago, she is motivated to run for office and get rid of the purge. And that is her plan. And she is stitched up by her bodyguards. And the rule that you can't kill politicians of class 10 or higher is taken away in the name of fairness, but it's actually
by the
so
new founding fathers.
Yeah, but it's actually so that they can try and kill her. So Frank Grillo is one of her bodyguards. He's the only one that doesn't betray her. So he, bodyguards her across town. We're also joined by like a bodega owner and their friends. And in the end, she wins the election and abolishes the purge.
Presumably forever.
Yeah.
Because we resorted to a prequel for the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Mm. So I knew about this one for a while. I heard, the next one is the Purge election year. It came out in 2016, so the same year of the US election where famously Donald Trump won And
usually when you say famously, you're referring to something very inside baseball that not like AJ famously likes sandwiches, like this person who's not even famous famously does something. But you just referred to Donald Trump winning the 2016 election with the same cadence in your voice, with the same energy. And it's like, no, Richard, that actually is maybe one of the most famous things to have ever happened.
Yeah. Anyway, so the interesting thing about this, the tagline for this film was "Keep America Great."
Wow.
Which Donald Trump clearly saw and thought, that ain't bad. And he used that for his 2020 re-election. So this was like, no, that's not just a coincidence that the purge election year used it. "Make America Great Again" was already quite famously Donald Trump's slogan. And then, so it was a play on that, and then he ended up using that for his re-election campaign, which he famously lost. And yeah, I loved the idea of, you know, oh, a politician trying to abolish the purge and really going into more of the political side of things, because that's what I'm kind of most fascinated about in this franchise, is the how do we end up here, you know? And no, instead it's just a escort mission.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what is fascinating? What I want to talk about with the political satire of this franchise is something you don't see a lot of, Richard, and that is political satire that, like, politically I agree with, but the satire is so dumb. And it's very rare you see, like, really numbskulled left-wing political satire, right? Like,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's very strange to see something that's so bleeding heart liberal, but then is also like, just like, has the boneheadedness of like something famous Republican Sylvester Stallone might make, you know? Like, like, I usually associate this style of movie with these like secretly Republican action stars, but this is definitely not Republican.
This is kind of, you know, talking about the franchise as a whole, this is my big problem with the franchise, is that, like, I would love to see the Purge election year as made by, like, Jordan Peele. Like, these are, like, I guess, yeah, you can call them satires, but they're not really. And it's like, the Purge should be a satire. The Purge should be hilarious.
Yeah.
But one of those things, it's like, you don't realize it's funny, but once it's pointed out to you that it's funny, you're like, oh my God, this film was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, right.
Like, so, yeah, you should feel like, there is subtext and there is, like, more going on. But, like,
let me give people
really
an example of the subtext in the Purge franchise. In the first Purge, as in the fourth Purge, the movie called The First Purge, there is a scene, and that film was heavily, like, marketed with Trump imagery. Like, the poster was a Make America Great Again cap.
That just said The First Purge, and July 4th was its release date.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, that was like, laden with Trump-ish imagery, right? There is a scene in that movie where one of the main characters is attacked by purges, and they're in a gutter, and they're in, like, the sewers, and they're reaching up, and one of them is, like, basically trying to, like,
grab her by the pussy
crotch. And she kills them or kicks them away and says, "Fuck you, pussy grabbers."
Yeah.
This is the level of left-wing satire we are dealing with. It's like stuff that doesn't make you think of, like, it doesn't leave you to go, you know, that's actually pretty similar to the real world. It's stuff that makes you go, remember that from the real world?
One thing that I think, you know, we were talking about how overt it is with this message, one thing that I would be remiss not to mention is that these are all produced by Platinum Dunes production company, which is Michael Bay's production company. So he was a producer on all of these films.
Wow.
Because of course he was.
Yeah.
Probably thought
he's
it was
not very. Tender. He's pretty conservative, isn't he? That's interesting.
I don't know. Is
it's
he?
Money speaks, doesn't it? Doesn't matter.
Money speaks.
Nothing Hollywood loves more than making a movie about the poor. And what's that line from The Simpsons?
Nothing. What?
There's a little line in The Simpsons that's a joke about how, like, the rich and powerful Hollywood producers love making films about how evil rich people are.
Mm.
Which is true. Look at Parasite winning Best Picture and then everyone taking home $10,000 gift bags.
Yeah. So, what did you think of The Purge election year?
I thought it was about as good as the Purge Anarchy. Mm. Again, if it came out first, people would probably like it more. What does it have on Roddy T's?
This one has, so the last one had 57, this one has 55.
Interesting.
So it's
okay,
the,
we're on our way to even a gold star franchise. Mm.
Also interestingly about this franchise is that the first four films, each one grossed more than the last. The Forever Purge came out during the pandemic, so
right.
It had that against it. So that's But I mean, that's interesting, like, especially for this kind of franchise that, you know, up until the fourth Purge, which is entitled The First Purge, you are still getting, you know, whatever the opposite of diminishing returns is.
Hmm. Returns.
Exceeding returns.
Exponential growth.
Yeah. So did you know that, according to IMDb trivia, this was actually the final Purge film until they had announced another one?
It does, yeah, I know that's very silly, but it is. It does feel like it's the end, the capping off.
Yeah.
Of
James DeMonaco, you know, that he directed the first three, and yeah, it's very much that. After part two, they were going to make a prequel telling the story of the first Purge, but it was. Frank Grillo accepted the offer to come back, so they said, oh, okay, we'll do something.
Oh, more. Right. Well, we'll facilitate the script then so that the character, having not aged a day since the second film, could come back.
A couple other pieces of IMDb trivia.
God, you must be, like, the screenwriters or the director, anyone on set who knows that this is supposed to be set, what, like 20 years later? Mm. It just must be like they're feeling so frustrated, being like, he's clearly not 20 years older. Why did we do it this way?
Yeah.
What an easy problem to solve. That's so funny.
Make him look older.
Yeah.
Couple
at
of
least.
Other pieces of dumb IMDb trivia. One is the people on the posters for this film all die.
Okay. That's kind of cool. Is it true?
It's because the posters for this film feature the guy dressed as Uncle Sam and his sort of cronies who appear for maybe a minute in the whole film and are immediately killed. And so it's
is
like,
is this the one where there's a whole storyline about foreigners coming to America to participate
to the
in
purge?
The purge, which feels like a weirdly, like, you know, like foreigners coming to America is a very charged idea to commit violence. And then it's just not really focused on. It sets it up and then nothing really happens with it.
Yeah. I mean, like the idea of purge tourists, that's a great idea.
Good idea.
Like these
do
are
a
things
whole movie
that,
about it.
That would be great.
Instead of a subplot.
The purge tourism. So in three unrelated movies, Forrest Gump, Con Air, and The Purge Election Year.
Okay, wait, let me guess.
Yeah.
Someone is dressed as a character and says a certain line or something
no,
like that.
No, so the actor who plays Bubba from Forrest Gump is in this film. Yes. And in all three of those films, he befriends the hero, gets shot in the stomach, and has one last conversation with the hero before dying or getting hauled away in an ambulance.
Incredible. This is incredible stuff. That's so funny.
So, as we have alluded to before, there is another film that came after the fourth Purge.
Alluded to?
It's actually called The First Purge.
Wait, I thought we already covered The First
no,
Purge.
No, see, AJ,
I'm confused.
Okay, so the first film was just called The Purge. We sort of colloquially referred to it as The First Purge. But there is actually a film that's official title is The First Purge. It came out in 2018. It was directed by Gerard McMurray. Right. And what do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes? So Anarchy had 57. Election Year had 55. What do you think this has?
I reckon this is like 40.
It's 56.
Wow.
Sits in the middle.
That's pretty equal then.
Yeah.
I thought everyone hated this one. That was the attitude that I had going into it, was thinking everyone hated this one. I didn't think it was that much worse than the other
three. That's the thing. It's like it's not actually a departure from the formula. So it's like, oh, no. Okay. So
yeah, exactly.
This one was directed by Gerard McMurray. But James DeMonaco wrote it. Frank Grillo said in an interview that he would only return for the fourth film if the script was good. The script was really good, and James DeMonaco will have something to do with the movie. He's not in this film.
Well, yeah, he would have had to been like 18 years old and presumably still looked the
same. It's so funny, the idea, like, because quite often it's like, oh, you know, like they're working on an idea and, you know, if the script's really good, that they talk about that when they're back in the film, but you don't often hear it about someone that's like, yeah, I'll come back if the script's really good, and then they don't return. But yeah, what is this one about?
So this is the new founding fathers have just come into power, and it is their plan to do something they call the Staten Island experiment, which is that for one night and one night only, all crime on Staten Island will be legal. And it's basically it's basically another Purge movie where characters are stuck out in the open when they don't want to be, etc., etc. I'm not even going to go into who the characters are because it's not really that interesting. It's not really about that. But what I did think is most interesting is that in this you get a behind the scenes peek, because Marissa Tomei plays a government official this, who through her storyline we learn that the Purge, as they are operating it, is not actually working, and there aren't that many deaths happening. People are mostly just staying inside, and so someone from the government sends mercenaries to start fucking shit up on Staten Island and start creating the need to retaliate from its citizens, which I think is a valid...
And they also paid a bunch of people to stay on Staten Island for the experiment.
And I think that's a valid and interesting wrinkle to put in the timeline that we, you know, before when I was saying the weird thing about the Purge is that it works and that feels at odds with what it's trying to say politically. Like, this is at least some kind of acknowledgement that, well, it had to be forced to work.
Mm.
And that is... again, a very American thing. It's very American for a political result to be achieved through gerrymandering.
Yeah.
That's essentially what is happening in this movie. And I thought that was a cool idea. As I said, what I didn't like about it is that other than that, it doesn't really do anything significant enough to be like, see where it all began. Mm. And so I kind of didn't like that about it. But I liked that. The government, the espionage stuff.
Like I said, like, this is the stuff I'm most interested in when it comes to this franchise. And it's interesting, like you said, this is a very American franchise, and I hope America knows. I hope our American listeners know. The rest of the world is laughing at you with these films.
I think they know by now.
Yeah, so, like, we look at The Purge and we go, fuck yeah, this could happen tomorrow. And I mean, it did happen tomorrow in the third film, but in the second film, and it's like, this is the kind of shit America would do. A political party calling themselves the new founding fathers. That's right up your fucking alley. You guys are probably right for them. Not our listeners necessarily, but
not our listeners. Our listeners don't count in the Americans.
I know. No,
making
fun
of right now.
But yeah, it's like, and you know, they're probably... there's probably a lot of people in those red states that watch The Purge and go, fuck, God, I'd love to.
Yeah. Yeah, and the political satire is, like, cleanly swept over their heads. Mm. Like, they're not seeing it as a condemnation on, like, this sort of American right to do whatever I want kind of thing. Mm. It's like they see it as being like, you better be fucking
sick. I can do whatever I want. No government's going to come and take that my guns.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of, like, The Purge is one of few franchises that I'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, do a prequel.
Yeah, right. Good point.
Yeah, it's like one, because just 5 years in, it is so normalized by the time we catch up with Ethan Hawke and his family that, yeah, it's like, yeah, how the fuck did the whole country get on board with this? Because the first one, it's like people are like, oh, yeah, well, you know, you don't, the parents say to the kids, hey, you don't remember what it was like before the purge, yada, yada. But it's like, yeah, I would love to see so much more of that process of how did the public become okay with this? Because it's not really a thing in the first one that you have legions of people that are like, no, this is pretty fucked up. I mean, it comes up obviously in later films, but yeah, it's, I mean, the first film, I guess, is so self-contained that, you know, maybe they just don't have room for that kind of stuff. But yeah, then the fact
there was,
that it's
there
like,
was a time before Trump where I thought comparing politicians you didn't like to Hitler was like a counterintuitive argument ruining point. Like you say, always like Hitler, and you go, okay, now we're not being serious in our argument. And then after Trump, I'm like, he was quite like Hitler. And so it's one of these things where it's like, well, the purge could never happen. And it's like, maybe not in a fun Hollywood way, but in a lot of ways, it kind of already is happening. You know, like in a lot of ways, the poor are targeted, and the idea of these people who are relying on the government dying is actually a very appealing idea to certain chapters of government, and so appealing, in fact, they might even push and allow for these deaths to happen so that they don't have the same burden. Like, it is, there is a purge, Richard, and it's slow and it's ugly, and Frank Grillo's nowhere to be seen. and as easy as it, like, this sounds like I'm complimenting the franchise, but I'm saying almost the opposite. It doesn't lean into the
real world, like,
it seems to be for all the parallels it draws, it still seems to be comfortably in the, like, this could still never happen phase. And it's like, what if it took itself a touch more seriously, you know?
Or even a touch less seriously. Like,
give us
a Trump. Give us a Trump parallel who, like, a very, very thinly veiled Trump parallel who was the guy that created the first purge. Like, if there's any franchise that should be doing, you know, that kind of surface level fucking bullshit, it's this.
Or
it should be cleverer than that.
Yeah, and see, it exists in, like, popcorn feature film, like, popcorn blockbuster, the worst, like, part of the spectrum of satire of how, you know, how to, like, communicate this message to people. It's firmly in the part where, like, the people who don't get it are going to think this movie's awesome, and the people that do get it are going to hate the movie. So you're not pleasing anyone.
Yeah,
it's never reaching its full potential.
But, like, I'm sure if you spoke to James DeMonaco about it, he would be like, you know, I just thought, what if a kid, his body grew older than his brain? Sorry, I was actually talking about The Purge. Mr. DeMonaco.
Right, yeah. Sorry, I get you.
but it's like he would have all the same
it's
stuff.
It's been a while since I've seen Jack, Richard, I'm sorry.
But it's, he would say all the same things you said about, like, you know, there kind of is a purge going on, and that people, you know, poor people are being targeted, and that's why I wrote these films, yada, yada. But it's just like, maybe he's just not a good enough writer.
Yeah. I love the way we take people down so soullessly on this podcast. It's never like, I didn't quite agree with this. It's always like, I've come to the realization that
he's an idiot.
Your art is invalid, and you as an artist aren't good enough to communicate the ideas that are clearly very important to you.
Yeah. Anything else to say about the first purge? We kept that off a little while ago.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were still talking about the first purge. Richard, the Forever Purge, it opens with us being told that the whole point of the purge election year is essentially null and void, and that she got voted out off screen.
Well, no, she served her 2 years, is her 2-term sentence. So the purge has been gone for 9 years. The new founding fathers.
New founding fathers.
I think they are.
Wow.
They're re-elected after her 2 terms.
I just found that so frustrating. I was like, oh, that was a good, like, when you've got this timeline and we went from this purge to the last purge, you've still got, you could do prequels in other places. Like, it doesn't need to be the first purge. It could be one we just haven't seen. And in this case, it is kind of different because of reasons we'll get into. But like, if I was writing a purge movie, I would place it somewhere in the timeline in which I could still tell a story without undoing the ending of it eventually being abolished.
Yeah.
So, and that's why I rated this one 2.5 stars instead of 3 stars. Yeah, like a little.
So I remember that after the first Purge came out, it was... Sorry, I'm talking about the first Purge.
Which one? Yeah. Sorry?
After that came out, there was... It was one of those, like, yeah, the franchise is done. Oh, wait, I have one more really cool idea. And then it was... Because I remember this was one that was delayed because of COVID, and so it appeared on our upcoming Films of the Year podcast a couple of times. And I remember it being, like, yeah, the writer being... saying, I've got just one last really cool idea that I have to get out, and it's going to end the franchise in a great way. And... what was his idea?
The idea is basically that after it comes back after 9 years, people are so thirsty to purge that after the alarm bell goes at 7 a.m. the next morning, the purge does not stop, and there is a group of people announcing the forever purge, and the idea is that it goes forever and never stops. And so the main characters, who are a group of whoevers, are trying to get through Mexico's currently open borders because that will allow for them to escape into Mexico. And they do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the movie basically says the purge will go forever in America.
Yeah, the government has lost control of America. It's you know, it ends with this aerial shot where just every city is fucking on fire. And yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it feels like another Rambo Last Blood, where it's like, oh, what if we had Mexicans? Because, like, you know, I feel like
it feels the opposite end of the spectrum to Rambo Last Blood, which was like, Mexicans are evil, and if you cross the border into Mexico, you will immediately get abducted by gangsters. Immediately. It'll be the first thing that happens to you.
But yeah, that was, sort of what I was expecting going into the film, that it was this kind of like, well, what if it happened in Mexico? Because it's just like the purge every day down there.
Well, and instead it's more like, I think more what this movie is doing is playing with the, like, what if Americans were trying to get across the border to Mexico instead?
Mm.
And I think that made me exhale sharply out my nose when I realized that's what the plan was, and that it's more about, like, presenting in Mexico as the safe haven instead of America for a change. And that was kind of interesting. I'm struggling to remember, like, anything else that happens in this movie. I saw about 14 hours ago.
So the director is a Mexican as well. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page. His name is Everardo Valerio Gout.
The director's Mexican, therefore he doesn't have a Wikipedia page, because Wikipedia do not recognize Mexico.
But he...
Look up Mexico on Wikipedia. There's no page.
Yeah, he directed a National Geographic series called Mars, which was why he was hired. But, and also one of the main characters is played by Tenoch Huerta, who was played Namor in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Nice. There's also the guy who played Hanzi from Fargo in this. He's pretty cool. I liked seeing him.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Do you think this idea was good enough to continue the franchise?
I think that there are probably ideas that exist that are good enough to continue the franchise. This kind of felt like it broke its own rules, and it was like, as soon as people kept killing, I was like, well, wouldn't they just do this every year? Like, it feels like they've done such a Hail Mary in saying that it actually has solved crime worldwide or nationwide, that by doing it like this, it's like, well, this doesn't really play up to the intellectual state of what you've told us this version of America is. Mm. So I don't know. I thought probably not, I guess, is my answer. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's like, they have announced a sixth film, and so we'll get to that. There is a sort of a plot for that one announced. But yeah, it is... the ending isn't enough like the Fight Club, oh God, what have I done sort of ending of, oh wow, this thing has gotten out of control and it's bigger than what I intended it to be now. And it's, I guess it is kind of a sequel tease, but yeah, I think there needed to be more of a moment of, and I mean, maybe it's just that, you know, this franchise doesn't really make me feel things. So at the end, when I see, you see that America is literally on fire, you know, I mean, I guess, it, you know, I actually kind of think there's already a purge going on in society.
There's already a bit of a fire that America is on.
Interesting. So the director of this film has said that if aliens were to come down to Earth, The Purge, the first one, would be one of the 10 films that they would, he would show them to represent who we are. What do you think of that statement?
The director said he would show them his own film.
No, so the director of the fifth film said that he would, that the first film represents humanity.
I think that'd be a very dangerous thing to show an alien who's capable, who's like, you know, comprehension when we don't know, you know, like, is it going to think this is real? Have you seen Galaxy Quest? They would have thought it was real in Galaxy Quest.
Mm, well, I mean, that might have been one of his other 10 films. I don't know.
That's true.
Maybe the first, would be a head trip. Maybe, because I mean, he's joining this franchise on the fifth film. Yeah. Maybe he's just a big fan. He's shown them 10 films, Cinema Paradiso, you know, to show people the power of film. Yeah. And then he's just like, and this one's fucking sick.
This one fucking rocks. What about this? A sequel to Galaxy Quest, where the aliens have seen the film Galaxy Quest and think it's real.
And they kidnap Tim Allen.
But therefore, they don't think... They don't think like Gilligan's Island is real because in Galaxy Quest they explicitly say that Gilligan's Island wasn't real. So they get that, but they think Galaxy Quest did happen.
So very strangely, our good friends at the Now Playing podcast have only reviewed The Forever Purge.
How mysterious.
What did they give it? So it's out of, you know...
Three thumbs up.
Three, so it's either recommended or not recommended, and there's three of them each give their score. So
I reckon they gave it three not recommends.
They gave it three recommends.
Insane.
Yeah.
What are you up to now playing?
Excited to get now a playing, pretty clear...
Now idea. Leaving.
What are you now playing at? So that is more or less the Purge franchise as we know it, although... Yes. There is more to come. There is a sixth film on the horizon. Jason Blum of Blumhouse Productions said that he intends to make more films and is working on convincing DeMonaco to contribute the story. That's what he said in 2021.
That's always good. That's always creatively rich when the head of the creative head of something is forced to write a new sequel.
Yeah. So he said that up until 4 months ago, sometime in 2021, said up until 4 months ago, this DeMonaco had intended The Forever Purge to be the final of the franchise, and then one day just woke up with another idea. They could, quote, flip this thing upside down and we can continue in a way that people can enjoy. And then
the upside down
story
purge.
For Purge 6 includes, get this, Frank Grillo returning.
Oh my God.
The story includes a now...
As an 80-year-old man.
Yeah. The story includes a now worldwide purge. An idea that had originally intended for the third season of the now cancelled television series, which we will get to.
Okay.
And DeMonaco is now signing on as director as well. It will take place 10 years after The Forever Purge, now in 2059. And so the portrayal of the dystopian tribalized America will be, and it's in the midst of the second American Civil War, and it's going to be a very Escape from New York kind of thing, apparently. So
just like the other ones are Escape from New York kind of things.
Yeah, so it will now...
Is it still going to be set in America, even though it's a global purge?
Yeah, so it's... And also, just if you're keeping track at home, it's... So it's now another 19 years after his last appearance.
Well, what are we calling this one? What do you reckon? I reckon I like the idea that the first three are the Purge something and the second three are the something Purge.
Yeah.
I reckon the Global Purge, the World Purge, the Worldwide Purge could be a cool title.
Yeah, it'll be called like the Purge Civil War or something like that.
Yeah, so that you don't think they'll do what I want them to.
Nah, so it'll be like the DeMonaco directed ones are the Purge something. But anyway, so yeah, the Purge TV series, this was ran for 20 episodes, 2018, 2019. Two 10-episode seasons. It is set between... First season takes place in 2027. Second one takes place in 2036. So they're kind of anthology series.
So Wow,
so
okay.
The first season follows several seemingly unconnected characters as they experience the Purge night of 2027, and it's kind of just, you know, that night, and it's all, what's going on? So I think, you know, it's spread out across one night. But I wanted to talk about the second season, because the second season, I will say, apparently not very good. Apparently none of the show is very good. But this, to me, is like, this is why you make a fucking Purge TV show. So the second season begins with the end of the Purge night, 2036. And then it deals with the characters dealing with the consequences of that night for the next year. So story is an ex-police officer have become bank robbers now. One is a new founding fathers of America detective following a suspicious killing of a scientist friend and discovers many of their peers have also been killed in suspicious circumstances. College,
this sounds great.
College fraternity members who went out to collect items and to do like a purge night scavenger hunt ended up getting into some serious shit and are now dealing with the PTSD of that. A husband and wife who survive an assailant only to discover that it was a hitman sent to kill the husband and now have to investigate why. Clear connections between these characters and their stories become apparent as the plot unfolds, apparently. But yeah, it's like, yeah, that would have been my continue the franchise, that the purge should be set after the purge.
Yeah, that sounds better than any of the movies. Hmm.
Yeah, it's got like 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. And like,
shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, right. Although I will say, so the series finale, the last episode of season 2, is called 7:01 AM. And it's about, to be fair, I don't know what it's about, but it opens with some people have bought this new security system and they're having a problem. So they call up the guy who sold it to them and it's Ethan Hawke and just makes a brief cameo appearance in the finale reprising his character.
And the 2036 set
episode. I don't know. It could be a flashback or something. I watched the little clip. There's not much context in it, but right, they brought him back for a little cameo. So
that's cool.
That's nice. AJ, do you have a Continue the Franchise?
Yeah, my Continue the Franchise, Richard, is called The Locked Down Purge.
Nice.
Or The Lockdown Purge, playing off, you know, as the Purge series does, plays off current nomenclature that elicits certain imagery. but it's not during a COVID lockdown. It's what happens when the Purge Day happens in like a maximum security prison.
Oh, yeah.
That's my question. And so they would lock it down, right? Mm. And so that no one could get out. But this is obviously where they do get out. And it's, and because so much of what I wanted to see in these Purge movies was like, is anyone robbing banks? Is anyone like doing these, like the Purge movies are all about people wanting to survive. None of them are about what would you do if crime was legal for a night.
Mm.
You know, because those are generally the bad guys. But what? Not every crime is, you know, inherently bad. Like, what, you know, so like, that's where it came from, is like, what happens in a prison? What happens in, and this is where I think the series should have gone after the first Purge, is focus on these niche, the fourth film, right. The first Purge, as focus on these niche places that could exist anywhere on the timeline, like a prison or a school or something like that, where it's like, what happens when there's no rules? And it would harken back, you could do it lower budget, harken back to what the first one's like. So yeah, I would set it in a prison. That's the extent of the
idea. One thing that we should have talked about is, what would you do on Purge night?
Stay home. I'd be so fucking scared, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, pussy. And I'm not going out. I'm staying in my loft.
Yeah, I think I would have gone out. I would have like done something when I was like 17 and I would have fucking regretted it and I would never do that again.
I live in a loft with a trapdoor. I would literally move my bed atop the trapdoor and just go to sleep.
I would throw Molotov cocktails in your window. That'd be my thing.
You bitch! Why would you do that?
there's interesting things that are like, That like, I would love to see more little implications of the world of the Purge, and maybe these things could be explored in my Continue the Franchise, which I'll get to in a moment. Mm-hmm. But like, things like, surely all flights are grounded for the night of the Purge, right? Because you could hijack
one. What if there was a red eye? You know, there's the sequel to Lockdown Purge, is the Mile High Purge, right? Where it's like, that's a great idea, right? Like a flight is delayed so that it has to take off during the purge, or is in the air during the purge, and it's like a snakes on a plane deal.
Yeah, like, but as I was talking about this with Andrew when we watched the first one as well, that it's like all the crimes where you'd be like, huh, I would commit fraud and or like I would buy things illegally. It's like these are things that are so hard to just do one night. I would just probably just illegally download movies, which I don't normally do. But
I bet video piracy is actually a class 11 crime or something. Like it's too illegal for the to be legal during the purge. I'd maybe loot a big department store.
Mm.
You know, someone who's not going to be truly hurt by me stealing stuff.
Yeah.
I'd go to the warehouse.
Where everyone gets a bargain. Loot a TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought experiment, isn't it? What would we do?
They made 5 movies about it. That's how interesting of a thought experiment it is.
So, my Continue the Franchise is a video game, and it's called Survive the Purge.
Yes, Richard.
And this could potentially be a VR experience because I recently got PlayStation VR 2. And tell you what, put me back in that digital world. I feel like
you said
garbage.
On the last post-credit scene that
I wanted
you
to live
wanted
in
the
Oasis. And I secretly thought, you know, VR can possibly be that immersive. But now I've been in it, I've simulated a job. And I want to live in there. I want to live in that job.
Very cool.
But the okay. So here's my idea: is that, and this is like doesn't even necessarily have to be a video game. This could be a TV series or whatever. But I think this lends itself to being a game. But the idea I had is that you would play. I always just pictured it as playing as a woman, and. It would be like, I would love to see it's like shuffling randomly through years of her life. So each level would be a different purge. And so it would be, and you get glimpses of her story. And, you know, there would always be some convoluted reason why you have to be outside during the purge or why you have to get from A to B on purge night. But so it's like, say, you know, the first one, it's like you are mid-50s, you are single, you have the reason, you doing the purge for whatever reason. The second level is you are 32, you've just got married, your husband dies at the end of that purge.
Non-linear.
Then, or you know, and then randomly you do one purge where you're pregnant, and then you do one purge where you have a 17-year-old daughter that you have to protect, and then you have one where you're a teenager, and then the next one. And so it's like this whole non-linear narrative. And then you would also like, you know, that could be the difficulty curve as well. And so certain ones would be action ones. Certain ones would be like very stealth sort of based levels. And, you know, you'd have ones that would be essentially escort missions. But yeah, it would be interesting to try. I mean, you'd have to get someone who's kind of into the purge because you couldn't just come up with that many reasons why. Oh, I'm outside again.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. I love it.
Thank you.
Great idea.
So, what else have we got to do?
French wise, Richard. Why did they French this? What did so? Oh, is this just a case of the first one making?
First one made
a
lot of money for, and it was a very cheap movie to make, and. Yeah, I think that the Blumhouse as a studio was sort of just burgeoning in popularity, and they would have been looking for a big, you know, IP to latch onto. And also, this thing has the, you know, why do you make a sequel to The Purge? It's like, so you can do the idea you intended to do.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Alrighty. Well, does that bring us to a certain point in the show?
It does.
We need to rank that franchise over at Letterboxd. So this is where we decide how bad is this franchise compared to other franchises we've covered. So Richard, where would you think we should rank?
Have you got the Letterboxd list up?
I'm about to.
Okay, I forgot to get it up.
Yep. Where do we reckon The Purge lands? The Purge is like a franchise of 3-star films that almost feels like it ends up being like a 3.5 star franchise because of how many
is this a gold star franchise?
I think so. What do you think? What's the Rotten Tomatoes of the Forever Purge?
That's a good point. Forever Purge, Rotten Tomatoes is 49.
Right, so everything is... I think it can still get a gold star if the first film is the lowest rated in the franchise. Yeah. It's actually pretty incredible. And how many times have we come across that before?
Yeah.
I'm just sort of glancing at these I would say, let's go... 76, but so it's not as good as the Psycho franchise, but it's better than the Rugrats franchise.
Yeah.
That sound good? Let's put it there. So that's number 76. It's the 76th best franchise we've ever covered. And I'll do the gold star later.
Nice.
And yeah, that is that. That brings us to where we select our next franchise.
Reveal our next franchise.
Over on patreon.com/coldpopshire, people have been typing and voting away on what the next franchise we're going to cover is. And before you reveal it, Richard, I would just like to say that if people have enjoyed our talk about The Purge, why not support us on Patreon, patreon.com/coldpopshire. For as little as a dollar, you get to be involved in shit like this, where you tell us which movies to watch. And you can also, if you can't support us financially, you can support us by liking us on Instagram and Twitter. And of course, this isn't exactly support, but you should join the Discord, where you can come and tell us about how cleansed you would feel after The Purge. Richard, what is the franchise for the next fortnight?
So our franchise for the next fortnight consists of five films. Yeah, that's right. And it is the Hannibal franchise.
Hannibal, this has been a long time coming.
Hannibal the Cannibal.
What a ridiculous thing to be at the center of a very serious series, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. So that'll be what? That's Manhunter.
Manhunter, Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, Red Dragon, and Hannibal Rising.
It's interesting that that late in the franchise they call one of them Hannibal. All right, everyone. See you next week. I hope you enjoyed The Purge and us talking about
it.
And
we will be doing a Cult Elders episode coming up.
Yes.
That will be next week.
So tell us your thoughts. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And we will be doing a post-credit scene after this music ends. Right now. Hi, and welcome to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
Today's one comes to us from Michael Prefontaine, who says, if you were a pirate captain, what would your name be and what would be the name of your ship?
I would be Alexander Swashbuckle and I would be the captain of the Mozzarella.
Oh, really?
What about you?
I'd be... Captain Stinky Balls.
Interesting. You're going to own that, huh?
Yeah.
And your ship would be called Captain Stinky Balls.
Yeah.
It's a coincidence.
Yeah, I actually. Someone else had named the ship after me, and then I plundered their booty and got the ship for myself.
That would have been quite...
Quite the caper!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.